Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Apologize, we're running a few minutes late this afternoon. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be here moderating today's panel discussion on handling disputes during coronavirus. A very important topic, a very timely topic, given what's going on in the world today. And really excited to have a panel of leading experts with us to share their insights and perspectives to help companies in the credit collection industry manage their dispute process. Let me take a minute and tell you about today's speakers. Rick Purr is the co-managing partner of the Philadelphia office of the law firm Kaufman, Dolowich & Valuk. He also chairs the firm's National Consumer Financial Services Practice. He is a nationally recognized authority and lecturer on creditors' rights, representing creditors, law firms, and agencies against individual and class action allegations invoking federal and state consumer protection laws, including the FDCPA, the FCRA, and the TCPA. Rick is a past president of ACA International and currently sits on the association's board of directors. David Schultz defends Fortune 500 companies, debt buyers, debt collection agencies, lawyers, lending institutions, and other in consumer litigation and counsels organizations throughout the consumer financial services industry on risk management. He's been lead counsel in more than 200 class action lawsuits involving claims brought under various state and federal consumer laws, including the FCRA, FDCPA, and TCPA. He is also active in several leading consumer financial services industry organizations, such as ACA International, the National Creditors Bar Association, and Receivables Management Association International. Mitch Williamson is a graduate of Rutgers University and New York Law School and joined Barron & Neuberger in April 2016, opening its New Jersey office. He represents law firms, debt buyers, collection agencies, and other businesses in litigation and government investigations. Prior to joining Barron & Neuberger, he was in-house defense counsel to Pressler & Pressler for 13 years. He's admitted to both the state and federal districts of New Jersey and the state and all four federal districts of New York. He's a frequent speaker and regular contributor on issues affecting creditors' rights. Prior to practicing law, he was a professional photojournalist working in this country and in Israel. The format for today's webinar is a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel or through the chat module. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. I know you can see me, you can see Rick, you can see Mitch. Dave's with us via phone right now, and there's been some storms in his area of the country, and his Wi-Fi has been going in and out, and he's been nice enough to call in and participate, and if his Wi-Fi picks up during the hour, we'll try and get him connected. But thanks to Dave for participating today under somewhat less than ideal circumstances. Before we jump into today's discussion, let me read the following disclaimer. This presentation is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Legal advice must be tailored to the specific circumstances of each case. Every effort has been made to ensure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area and should never be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. With that, let's start our discussion. So, there seems to be this line of thinking that people are more focused on their financial situations today because they have more time, they're not as busy, they're staying at home. Have you heard or noticed any changes to the volume of disputes that are being made by customers? And Rick, maybe you can kick us off on that.
Sure. And Mike, thanks for having me on the panel. I always appreciate the professional job that's done, and I'm glad to be joined by Mitch and Dave. Although I think that Dave is really just using the internet as an excuse because he doesn't want his hair looking like mine is. The lack of grooming that's available today. I am tempted to leave the stay-at-home restrictions of New Jersey and potentially fly somewhere where barbers are open so I can get my hair cut. But I appreciate being on the panel. Even just this morning, I think that I read somewhere in an article talking about the CFPB putting out information relating to the complaint portal in which debt collection seemed to fall to about fourth in number of complaints that they've received over the last period of time. And I think that's interesting. One of the commentaries suggested that, in fact, that's partly due to the fact, as what you said, Mike, people are paying a lot more attention to their finances. They're looking at certain things that they're dealing with personally. And the number one area of concern and complaint happened to deal with mortgages, which again, wouldn't be surprising. It is an area where, given the time frame that we're in, given the time that people have available to themselves, and given the dilemma that they're facing, both personal finances, and probably the biggest single payment you have, or most people have, is their mortgage. So that seems to be the color of the day in terms of where the focus is, directly because they're dealing with their finances. I've talked to clients and on the flip side of that, not as much from disputes, but from people who are not spending as much on gas. They're not spending as much maybe on takeout because they're cooking at home. They don't have certain transportation expenses. They're starting to pay obligations. And many of my clients have seen an uptick. How long that lasts is another story. But I think for the time being, there's definitely a correlation with people being at home and starting to pay attention to their finances.
I think there's another aspect to that, which is there's been a drumbeat of information coming out from all the industry associations to back off and to go easy on collection efforts. There's also, as we know, there's quite a few states where they're trying to curtail collection activities. And I think people are beginning to get sensitive to that. Collectors have to be sensitive to that point. I know in New York and the city council, they're trying to ban all collections. So companies within the area, you know, are on notice to take it easy and not be as strenuous in their efforts to collect. At the same time, I think there's a lot of agencies who are simply closed. I have several clients that they've just closed up for the time being, and all they're doing is monitoring mail, but they're not making outbound calls and they're not sending out letters. I've also had clients who their clients are telling them, we don't want you doing that. We don't want you sending out letters. We don't want you sending out mail. So if there's less activity, there's going to be less collection, less disputes. I also think Rick's point is good. I know on a personal level, all of a sudden you're not spending a lot of the money that you normally spend on your day-to-day activities because you're at home. You're not going anywhere. So you don't have a dry cleaning bill. You don't have gas. So, and I think that's the same for other people. So that those who are on top of it or want to get on top of it do have more money all of a sudden and can make some payments to lessen the burden and on their debts.
Yeah, I just follow up on what Mitch said. This is Dave Schultz. Rick, you're lucky that I'm not there in person. I think everybody else is better off too. This is probably best to do it without the video on me due to the hair situation and others. I'm in Illinois, and you know, unlike Massachusetts, where the AG is trying to shut down collection, the Illinois department took the position that you can collect, but sort of the compassionate collection, it wasn't a mandate. It was a request. And something they kind of said they'll look into and follow up. And just from talking to some of the clients, I don't know if they've taken it to heart necessarily. I suspect it's more what Mitch said about there are a number of these just not being just not having the volume of communication out that they had before. And I suspect without the communications going out, those disputes are going down. Although the slight flip side of that, I do more litigation. I seem to be seeing more of the pre-suit and the file suits involving threats. And just literally just yesterday, two pre-suits I was looking at were the client claiming, the debtor claiming that they were trying to address their financial circumstances due to the pandemic. They actually put that in the draft complaint due to the pandemic, and that the debt collectors were not cooperative and were making essentially false statements to them. And another one that was focused on communications literally in the last 2 months with the pre-suit demand. So it's still out there. I kind of feel like some of that is as a consequence of the pandemic, or at least they're maybe taken advantage of the circumstance to say it's because of the pandemic. So I'm saying a little bit of both.
I see we have a question.
Yep.
I'll read it out. How should we treat responding to disputes in states where debt collection has been halting, like Nevada and Massachusetts? Do we hold off replying due to this, or do we reply to make sure we comply with federal law? My short response was you should respond if you can, even if to say we'll put it on hold because we can't really get into it. We're operational now, but no response is never, I don't think is ever a good game plan.
I guess it would become tricky if you're in a state where you can't collect, because if you start at least orally engaging with the debtor to respond to dispute, I could see how somebody could say, you know, part of that communication was an effort to collect the debt, and therefore they were a violation of the state, at least the temporary state restraining practice. So I think you're right, Mitch. If you can respond, but maybe respond in writing where it's controlled, that's better off than ignoring it.
Yeah, I think
agree with that.
That, you know, the real question comes up in terms of you have that catch 22. You know, the Federal Trade Commission has said that, for example, passive credit reporting is not collection activity. Yet, if you actively credit report, in other words, report on a monthly basis, you update a report, that is deemed collection activity. So in those states where there are bans on collection activity, you have the difficulty of saying, am I going to update the report? I get the verbal in, I get the dispute that comes in, I update my system, again, all internally, but now I'm have an obligation under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, for example, if I am reporting, to notate that the account is disputed under 1692E. And so my question is, do I update the report when I'm being told don't actively engage in collection activity? On the flip side, you see what's going on in Congress right now and the new HEROES Act that at least has been proposed from the Democratic side, which purports on its face to ban for a period of time negative credit reporting. They only want the good stuff, but you know, but the bad stuff you got to hold off on. You can't do it during the period of the pandemic, which is defined as a very long period of time. And even when it's over, there may be some restrictions on what you could negatively report that occurred during the period of time with the pandemic. And there may be some sort of blanket period. So Congress seems to at least be suggesting at least one half of one house that says, we want you to credit report. We just don't want you to credit report the bad things. And on the flip side, you have some states that say, don't credit report at all because it's collection activity. And I think you're in a little bit of a catch 22, but it, you know, as Mitch and Dave have both indicated, you're better safe than sorry. I doubt you're going to get a lawsuit that's going to say, you updated my credit report to say I was disputing something. I want to sue you by telling people that I disputed it. I think you'll have a tough time with the jury, you know, a year and a half from now.
I think you raise a good point, Rick, in terms of the interplay between a new state regulation and the federal law. But I think that's where federal preemption would come into play, and that which dictate that an accurate, if you're reporting it, be accurate. And I don't think a state rule, current rule, would be able to overcome that. I think a better answer is, if you're reporting and you're reporting it negatively, it's a dispute, or you're reporting it negatively, let's say, and your ongoing report, what do you do if a state does advise you that you can't report negative? Now what do you do? Because you're already reporting it. Is it continuation? Is it a new report? I don't know the answer either, but I think it's a good question.
I know that. Again, we don't have the HEROES Act as having passed. It's a long way away from doing that and what's going to be in there. But based on the preliminary information, You know, I mean, I'm relatively inclined to be talking to my clients about avoiding any negative credit reporting during that period of time. It's the only thing I can say that you can assure yourself you can't get it wrong by not reporting it. The problem will happen when the period of time is over and what guidance we're being given on how do you report in the present non-pandemic era events that occurred either during the pandemic era or pre-pandemic era on someone's credit report, and if those sudden changes impact scoring, that's going to, you know, create a whole host of FCRA suits that you'll see develop. So I think the real difficulty comes then. You know, being safe today is probably what I'll be telling my clients, because it's not worth trying to test the limits of the law, particularly in these circumstances.
So, Rick, this is David. Would that include, you know, new placements that you're getting, saying, you know, hold off on putting them on the credit report at the moment? Why don't you just give it a month or two before you upload them?
Well, if the HEROES Act passes the way it's written today, absolutely. I think that seems to suggest
you
can't put any negative credit reporting on someone's record during the pandemic. Right. And then I think they have 120 days after it. So they're kind of, it's not as clear about what happens after everything's lifted, but it seems to provide the period of time as that length. You know, that'll really fundamentally change people's credit reporting practices.
Well, I think it's safe for new claims if you simply don't report. There, I think that's good advice. I think the real problem or the question is, for those that are already being reported, how do we handle those? Do we cease reporting and let them cease new updates and let them stand if they're negative? If nothing happens, and do we update if we get a disputed? Then do we update to market disputed in those instances? I'd say yes.
I think that whichever way we go, the boundaries are going to be tested by very ambitious plaintiff lawyers who are going to see the opening of the courts and this whole new regulatory scheme as a fertile ground to test some of their theories.
Oh, absolutely. And they'll be hungry as well as ambitious.
Yes.
Well, we've got a couple more questions that have come in. So I'm going to take those before I move on to any of my discussion topics. A question here, someone who is in Virginia. Some courts will accept garnishments again starting Monday. What are your thoughts on going forward with post-judgment activities? I feel like the permission from the courts protects us from legal repercussions, but I also feel like we should hold off until the state completely reopens on June 10th. I know it's a little bit off topic, but if anybody has any opinions they want to share, feel free to chime in.
I'd be very hesitant to do a garnishment unless the state is fully open. I think even if it's acceptable under the law, even if there's protection, I think the optics are truly bad. And I could see a headline in local newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch brings up a good point. I'll touch on the optics in a second, but I think that a lot of states and a lot of places, even if they're allowing garnishments, for example, are saying that the stimulus money, the COVID-19 stimulus money that people are getting, checks, are not garnishable. We all know the practical aspects of you garnish a bank account. The bank doesn't make the choice of what to garnish or what not to garnish. It requires the consumer to basically claim exemptions. So you've put yourself in a real pickle because you're going to have a frozen account. You're then going to be on a back and forth. You're then going to have to figure out if there's stimulus check money that's in there. And, you know, that becomes problematic because then you're garnishing stimulus money, which then becomes a problem. Now you go to what Mitch said, which is the optics. If you get a headline and there are reporters, there are news stations, there are entities that are out there that are just waiting for the headline. We've seen them, whether it were the people that were hoarding jail or events that are taking place in restaurants or elsewhere. If you're an agency that has a headline, the impact may not be directly on that particular case, but how many clients are going to suddenly say, I may not want to do business with you. I don't want to be tied up with that. How many Twitter keyboard warriors are going to go out there and start using you as an example? And you may get some unwanted press on social media that, again, may force pressure into certain of your clients. If you're dealing with hospitals, if you're dealing with local businesses that may say, we just don't want to be associated with you anymore because of these events. So I'd be very cautious about doing that. A lot of bad things can come, and you'll be able to have the opportunity to do that garnishment if you have that information when a lot of this stuff calms down.
And I'd like to add one last point to what Rick is saying, is that some of the biggest cases I've seen in terms of money are on relate to garnishments. Only bad things seem to happen, and now is not the time. The lawsuits, when you garnish someone's wages or even restrain them for a period of time, and it turns out that you were wrong, it's not a good place to be. Not a case you want to defend.
Okay, thank you. Another question. We are hearing that credit repair organizations are sending disputes purportedly from consumers in which hardship due to COVID-19 is the basis for their dispute. If furniture has a policy to apply the exemption in Reg V related to responding to credit repair organization letters, are they safe to invoke that policy in this scenario? Anyone want to go first?
Here's the difficult part. I mean, you touch on two different areas dealing with disputes. Clearly, there have been many webinars, many instructions. There's litigation ongoing about the role of credit repair organizations and whether or not you have to respond to a dispute that is generated from a known credit repair organization. You take some risk when the dispute comes in with you evaluating it and determining that it's a credit repair organization when on its face it appears to come from the consumer. And you're going to take a look at a lot of extrinsic evidence to make that judgment. So you then multiply your exposure of judging whether or not that dispute is from a credit repair organization by now taking the COVID-19 exemption and saying, despite knowing that's the reason, and every regulation and everything that Congress has said already in the CARES Act, what it is saying in the HEROES Act, seems to put the burden particularly on the collection agency, meaning they just have to use those words and invoke those words, and then you have to take them at their word that that's in fact the problem. Now you're putting the burden on yourself of saying, you may be subject to it. You may be having some hardship. I don't trust that this is coming from an individual. And on top of that, I'm ignoring the fact that it's a COVID-19 related dispute. That's takes a lot of guts to be able to go ahead and make that determination when the easy thing to do is just to respond to the dispute, despite the fact that you may be getting many of them. It may be time consuming and it may put a stress on your staff. Just the sheer risk really doesn't outweigh the reward of not having to respond to those disputes.
At least Rick, you took the words out of my mouth. Risk versus reward. it's just not worth it. You know,
it's interesting. Wisconsin had put out before they opened back up. I don't know if it was the revenue department, banking and insurance, whatever proper name they had, put out sort of a plea to collection agencies. They weren't banning collection activity. They weren't telling you to stop collecting in their state. But what they said was, the specter under which people are going to judge whether activity was reasonable, whether it was unfair or unconscionable, is going to be measured by the perspective of the jury and those people who are in the jury that are going to have lived through this period of time. And so what may be ordinarily normal or acceptable is not going to be deemed acceptable in COVID-19 pandemic land. And be forewarned, collection agencies, that those people sitting in the jury box 2 years from now are going to be the same people that are going through this. So you better modify your tactics to accommodate more reasonableness, accepting people's disputes, accepting what they have to say as the basis. You're not going to be demanding a whole litany of prove to me you've lost salary, prove to me a member of your family's been furloughed, prove to me that you're in a dire situation in order to invoke some COVID-19 relief. And I think that what they said is an appropriate, you know, call sign for all of us in looking at measuring disputes, at being a lot more lenient, being a lot more relaxed in how we're viewing disputes during this period of time, because they're right. Same people that are sitting in the jury are gonna look back and go, you know what? I remember what my life was like. I'm going to nail you guys, and it's all going to happen 2.5 years from now when those things turn into lawsuits and you finally get into a jury box.
You know, Rick, that's interesting. It's not necessarily tied to disputes alone, but, you know, all of us defend a lot of lawsuits. And one of the things we see a lot is people claiming, I don't just have statutory damages, I have actual damages based on the conduct. And more often than not, there's not a ton of merit to that in the lawsuits or even when you go to trial. What I do expect us to see more of are lawsuits in the next year or so where the people claim actual damages as a consequence of the collection activity during the pandemic. And they're going to be able to say, I was at home, I was dealing with my family, I was under stress. And those claims are going to be more difficult to defend. And they're going to raise to the level of what you're talking about, I think. We're going to see that, and that's not just disputes. I just think that in claims in general, that's what we're going to see.
And you'd agree, Dave, that, I mean, in this circumstance, not taking somebody's word that they are affected by COVID-19, if they do dispute and invoke the remedy of some degree of forbearance, you're playing with a lot of fire. For agencies to simply say, prove it to me, or give me some heightened level of an excuse beyond simply their word.
Yeah, I do. And stuff that would normally be said in a phone call, which may not sound so offensive, you know, 3-6 months ago, I could see it being twisted a little bit more as extreme lack of compassion, you know, the doubting, the comments. That I think is going to be the one of the few things different that I see coming out of this in connection with lawsuits we filed. It's the emotional distress or actual damage element, and they're going to view things, like you said, differently because now they're the jury or whoever.
I think that, Mike, those questions I asked before in terms of, because we're talking about phone calls, if people are working from home remotely, what's going on there?
I will watch the poll now. So the poll's up on your screen. Just curious how many of you are where everybody's in the office, how many of you where there's everyone working remotely, and how many where there's a combination of both. And we'll let that populate for, give people a minute to answer.
while you're doing that, my internet seems to be backed up, but I'm a little nervous about trying to zoom in and get knocked out again, so I think I'll stay on the phone.
Okay, that's fine.
Because I want to expand on Dave's point.
Go ahead.
In terms of phone calls.
So right now we're at about 8% where everybody is working at the office, 37% where everybody is working from home or remotely, and 55% where it's a combination of both. If that helps provide the context you're looking for, Mitch.
Well, yeah, because what I'm going to say is that I've always believed that the best defense to a phone conversation is a recording. And when people are working from home, remote or working remotely, are, you know, that could be a real problem if they're not capturing those calls. That's my concern. That's where I think is going to be a real sticky issue if people are working remotely, both on a reception of mail and entering mail into their systems, and phone calls, recording calls, so that it doesn't become a he said, she said regarding that conversation. Because as Dave points out, that could be a real problem.
No, and that's a great point, Mitch, and that working from home, most agencies have not set up or established recording calls. So if you have a policy on handling disputes that gives some discretion to the agent, you are opening yourself up to a situation where it is going to be he said, she said, as opposed to a blanket policy, you know, maybe mirroring the HEROES Act or the language that's being proposed or what's in the CARES Act, and saying anybody who mentions anything about COVID-19, it is the policy of our company to go through the following steps about asking them if they would like forbearance, and then establishing a protocol for seeking forbearance and putting it in there, so that even at the worst case scenario, you could say, even if the plaintiff said what they said they was said, we at least have procedures in place that we were automatically going to ask them if they wanted forbearance. And we have procedures in place and bona fide error, at least to have a stab at it on a he said, she said. But, the general direction that almost all states are going in, what the federal government looks to be looking at, is some degree of making forbearance available to those who wish to have it, with a very limited threshold for their qualification for forbearance. It may be as easy as just asking for it and you got it.
Yeah, I want to address, you know, Minnesota came out today, they reissued their order regulations allowing collectors to work from remotely. And the last point I want to read, the licensee shall at all times exercise supervision of the activity being performed at the home office and ensure that appropriate safeguards and controls are in place to protect consumer information and data. So to follow up on what Rick is talking, saying, do you have separate and new updated policies and procedures governing those you have working at home? And if you don't, I suggest you get them. You prepare them and get them out ASAP to cover these things, because that's the first thing you're going to need. That's your first line of defense for if you're going to claim bona fide error, is that you have policies and procedures in place, and they've been distributed to all those concerned.
Speaking about policies and procedures, and looking at the fact that 93% of the people who took part in the poll just now, even though it's not scientific, have some amount of employees who are working from home, how do you recommend they address the workflow of a dispute now that you may have some of those employees working from home? You may have mail coming in to an office where there's nobody or not very many people there. how do you sort of address all of those policies and the changes to those policies and procedures, or what recommendations would you make? Maybe David, you can go first.
Yeah, once I know work with our own firm, we have specific people on a daily basis having, you know, tasks with regards to the mail. I assume everybody else is on the listening in has something in regards to addressing that. When I saw this question, though, it kind of reminded me of there are a bunch of cases out there, and I deal with them in sort of hotspot areas where plaintiff's lawyers or plaintiffs send their disputes in not through the regular mail, it's through faxes. And then they oftentimes try to find odd fax machines, and they can get different numbers on the internet. This is a very common, you know, cease request, a dispute, attorney representation coming in through fax to an odd spot. I could see this situation with a lot of work from home, where the faxes get missed. And so that, you know, that's one thing you want to keep a focus on, not just the fax number that's on your letters where you'd expect to receive a fax, but some of the other fax numbers and fax machines you got at your place. It's hard to believe it, but every month or two, every couple months, we get claims based on ignored faxes.
And the point that's, you know, highlighted by both the question and Dave's answer is set out in the current sort of struggle or tussling that's gone back and forth between the CFPB and certain state attorneys general. The CFPB has said, look, in light of the pandemic, in the light of the fact that many people are working from home, the CFPB is not going to be so stringent in its examination of agencies or entities, data furnishers, who are going beyond the 30 days of investigating a dispute that's normally required under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And on the flip side, you have some attorneys general who've been writing a letter to the CFPB, crying and complaining that how dare you try and suggest that government should relax any of its enforcement, dealing with these disputes and having them done in a timely manner is the right of the consumer, and that justice delayed is justice denied in engaging in this activity. But you have that pull and tug of the capacity to do it, to be able to do it within that time frame, the realistic fact that going to and handling a dispute may not be practical if you don't have people that are going to the office to pick up the mail, if your fax machines aren't working, if you don't have as many people on the phone answering it, at the same time that these same states are demanding that people stop collection activity. So you have a lot of contradictions that take place between various sectors, both state and federal, and there is no right answer that's out there. I don't think that again, the state's attorney general don't have too much power to enforce it, but there's just practical realities. And at the end of the day, saying we don't have the manpower to do it is probably going to be defensible in the future if somebody were to try and engage in some sort of enforcement action.
So I'm thinking about this in terms of do you have procedures for getting the mail onto your system? That's one issue. And do you have procedures for distributing calls so that those people who are working remotely have access to them? And in terms of faxes, I've seen quite a few of those cases, and that is a constant ploy. And I've had some clients who've actually gone over to eFax, to an electronics fax, so that the faxes all come into the computer and they don't have this problem of random fax machines somewhere in the office that somebody forgot that one was in somebody's office in the back. And now this is even a more, it becomes more crucial to have setups like that to look at. And certainly if it was a short term, some of these solutions which cost some money, require an investment, were short term, they might not be worth it, but we don't know how long this is going to last. And it might be worth looking into and seeing what can your organization do to ensure that the information flow is upgraded to accommodate working remotely as we go forward.
Sorry, I just had to find the unmute button. Going back to a question that's come in from the audience, going back to not when we were talking about not reporting, if you don't report, aren't you also at risk for not updating paid accounts and deletions?
Yeah, that's a catch 22. Now here's, again, depending upon sourcing and who you're, which legal source you're relying on. If you're relying on the concept that passive reporting, meaning reporting something and then leaving it there and not changing it, is not collection activity, like the FAIR, you know, the Federal Trade Commission has indicated. If you're accepting that as the definition, then if you don't change it, even if you have updated information, you're not engaging in reporting activity.
Correct.
If the federal government, through the CARES Act or the HEROES Act, says you cannot negatively report, arguably, if you were to update an account, well, I mean, we've seen enough cases that particularly if you're updating it with more negative information, you're exacerbating the negativeness of the situation, then it may be, that would be a violation of those statutes. By the way, those statutes, at least as they're proposed, have 10 times the normal damages allocated to them right now. So the proposal by the House of Representatives says if you violate the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act right now, it's not $1,000 per violation, it's $10,000 for action. So, you know, we're dealing with some much more heightened risk, as Mitch and I talked about the risk reward before. So, yeah, I mean, you probably have some moral obligation to update it, and maybe in some universe, if someone made a payment and you updated it, it would be considered more positive. In other words, it was really negative before and now we've made it a little bit better, but it's still negative. And you'll still have an updated, more recent negative reporting on someone's credit report. And most scoring models use the time of the reporting as a factor. So the newer items are much more injurious to your credit score than older items. You've seen some plaintiff's attorneys make the argument that leaving something on a credit report is better than updating it, because even if you update it, it becomes more current and therefore more negative. So I think that, in my opinion, if I would hold off even updating and just waiting until after the pandemic was over, until after the restrictions on credit reporting were gone before I would update it. But that's just, you know, with what's out there in its current form.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with you to some extent in that if it's something that's going to be something that's going to be positive, I could see a lawsuit down the road that my client made payments specifically to upgrade their credit status because they wanted to do something, and by not, you know, giving the accounting for their payments, and that they were the account they were trying to do the right thing, they lost opportunities or their credit score remained low. So that would be my concern. And certainly for a deletion, if the payment allows you to delete the account, the trade line, I think there's no downside to that.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with you there at all, Mitch, that if you're going to delete something totally off somebody's report, go right ahead. But if you're going to change something that was, you know, in collection account that owes $600 and that reporting took place 3 months ago, and you're going to change it to still in collection, now they owe $550, and it's going to be current, in other words, today, I'm not exactly sure that the payment of $50 changes their credit score to a positive. I'm not an expert on it, but there's at least some cases out there and some arguments by plaintiff's attorneys that would say the change of that amount wouldn't have changed the score because you've just made the account more current and it's still negative and it still may be tangentially more negative because it's 3 months newer on someone's scoring. And again, it's enough that makes me cautious to do it, but I don't think that you're wrong either.
No, and I would agree with you. And I think the point you make is well taken in that you've got to really look at it. And that requires some consideration. What is the payment? And I think I would agree with you. It's a $50 payment. On the other hand, if it's a $600 debt and it was a $300 payment, you might want to consider that a little differently so that you really, it requires some thinking, some thought, some evaluation on the part of the agency, the collector, to know what to do next. You just can't do it automatic. You've got to evaluate each case as it comes in. I think that's the bottom line.
And that's sometimes very tough to do in an understaffed environment. You know, you got to have your best people taking a look at it. You don't want the new person you hired 2 months ago to be making some of those discretionary decisions.
And that's a great point. And that's another, from an operational point of view, are you moving accounts in that, you know, are you putting them on different tracks so that you can get those kinds of accounts to your best people and not so you don't have a problem?
I had a question, but I'm going to instead hold on to it because one just came in from the audience. Isn't that picking and choosing in and of itself a problem, though?
Anytime that you are applying discretion as opposed to a fixed policy and sort of ministerially engaging in that policy automatically, yeah, you open yourself up to a little bit more risk. But the dilemma that we face is these statutes and these proposed statutes and these state regulations are not being implemented in some rational way with all the stakeholders joining in and making decisions about how does it work in a practical aspect. We have legislators and regulators who are just doing things on the fly, and some of it's just contradictory. And it puts a real burden on the agency who's left to interpret it with them and their compliance people and their lawyers to try and figure out what to do. And this may be one of those times, particularly in the, because of the exposure and the penalties that are being ramped up, that you know, you may have to sit back and go, we have to do some picking and choosing. As an ordinary course, you know, I'd never recommend it, but in this time, it just may require it. Unless you just choose, I'm doing no credit reporting at all. Easy, solves the problem. But in most cases, it doesn't solve the problem for business.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but maybe we can use this as a last question to go around the panel. I'm curious, we talked a little bit, we got a question earlier about a new type of dispute that a collection agency is seeing. And I'm curious if any of you have heard or noticed any changes to the types of disputes that agencies are receiving, or if you're going, if you can make any predictions as to what agencies can expect to see in terms of the types of disputes that may show up now as a result of what everybody is going through. Maybe Mitch, you can take us through first on that one.
Well, I can't say that I'm seeing any new disputes. If anything, I think I'm seeing less disputes in general because there's of a lessened activity. Certainly in the New Jersey, New York area, which is where I am, things are ramped down for the most part. A lot of, as I said earlier, a lot of my clients are simply not engaging. They're not sending out letters. They're not making outbound calls. As far as new disputes coming from this, I think that all these areas where we had covered in the office, phone calls, I think that's going to be a real potential problem. I think there's also going to be a potential problem with mail. Disputes that came in by mail and not reaching anybody because there's not the, the normal distribution of mail as there would be in an office environment. So that could lead to some problems and delays. In particular, restraints. I think are going to be restraints and garnishments if they're out there. Because that's a problem. If they if they're out there, if they were sent out pre, and I know I've seen where garnishments could go out and it'll take 2 to 3 months before they actually hit. Or bank levies until they're served. So something you did when it was okay could come back and bite you. That's a possible area of concern.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a legitimate area. Even for things, and I know I saw something come up on one of the chats or one of the questions that asked about events that predated the pandemic and you're only getting to them now. You have to just treat everything today as if it's happening today. You're really just running a lot of risk, and, you know, and you may be right at the end of the day, but do you really want to test it in front of a jury? Do you want to test it in front of a judge? A lot of times you just gotta take the disputes at their face value. You gotta be sympathetic. You have to be willing, you know, your first step should be about how do we push this down the road, forbear? How do we work with the person? And you can ask them the questions of, well, we can resolve the dispute now. We can try and get to it. We can try and settle the case, if the account. If you're having some financial difficulty, maybe your clients are going to have really super settlement programs available and that you work with your clients on getting that, you know, it may be a great opportunity to get people to resolve some of their accounts and having very compassionate conversations, but letting them know that throughout this whole process, if they want to forbear, they can, but if they want to resolve it, we have some really favorable terms right now and just that skill set of having that conversation is really going to be in demand. At least for the next couple of months.
I think you had a couple points in response to the question from Dave. I see a lot of pre-suit demands in lawsuits involving disputes that are not handled correctly, not understood as disputes, not received, et cetera. I have every expectation that based on the change in the business practices currently in place, you know, working remotely, et cetera, we'll see an uptick in those. And it's just a very common complaint I see, and I'm just going to see more of it. I think we're going to see, and I've already started seeing, that the nature of those disputes, the nature of disputes in one way or another is going to be tied to COVID. I mentioned already at the beginning, communications while the person was at stay at home created more problems than normally. Or people trying to fix their credit because they're applying for jobs for the first time because they've been unemployed and they had previously worked for a number of years. That's going to be a pretty serious issue, and it's going to turn into what I mentioned before. It's not, I think we're going to see claims that are going to assert emotional distress, actual damages, but this time have more appeal than they did perhaps previously. And I'd say the last thing that I would sort of expect to see, and it's somewhat tangential to your question, is whenever there's a change in the law, there's always a lag in complying with it or keeping up with it or adjusting to it or understanding it. And what we have in place right now at a number of states, mainly attorney generals or regulators, is certain changes as to what you're supposed to do. And we've all seen this, and all the panelists, and I'm sure you have as well, in reviewing it. It's a somewhat common complaint to turn a violation of even a temporary state requirement into a Fair Debt claim. And so, If you're not keeping up with what are viewed as restrictions, obviously Massachusetts is one extreme, but there's other ones out there, in particular with regards to garnishments. There's questions about that. Those are going to turn into claims.
Thanks. Before we wrap up, there's one more question maybe we can get to quickly. For disputes received from all three credit bureaus, would we still update as necessary due to the debtor keep disputing their account or wait until the pandemic is over? Any advice on that one quickly?
Well, I would definitely, I would definitely update to say the consumer disputes, that very part of it. Right now, the HEROES Act hasn't gone into implementation yet. So we have to wait and see about whether what the impact on credit reporting is going to be from the federal level. But, you know, if someone disputes something, I think that at the very least, whether you're doing the XB code, XC code, AW code, you're probably in good shape to update that, at a minimum, that code.
Yeah, I think that's, I would agree with that.
Go ahead, David.
No, it's funny. I had the exact same question yesterday by a client, and I gave pretty much the same advice as Rick did. So, yeah. It's not legal advice, but I'm telling you, that's what I did say.
And you didn't violate attorney-client privilege by telling us that you told them that.
No, I didn't.
All right, well, we run out of time. So, Rick, Mitch, Dave, thank you so much for taking time to share your insights, your expertise, your perspective with us. This is a complicated topic, and as we've discussed, it's a moving topic. So, appreciate you taking the time to walk people through and give them some sage advice, and definitely look forward to having you all back soon. Rick, anytime you want the Gibb haircut, just let me know. Happy to drive down and make that happen. But guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for everybody who attended.
Yes, that's my next one. Thank you to everybody who attended, who asked questions. Appreciate your participation. Stay tuned. We've got webinars on Monday about how to reopen your office. We've got a public health expert and a real estate expert. We've got Tuesday sales and marketing, Wednesday converting to online training, and Thursday what's working in collections today. So we've got a lot more webinars coming up. You can always sign up through the links on accountsrecovery.net. So thanks for your participation. Everybody stay safe. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye now.
Thanks.